This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 332, Telephone Lines. Hello and welcome to GamesAtWork.biz. My name is Michael Martin. I'm glad to be back again in the saddle with my co-hosts. Let me kick things over to my friend across the pond, co-host Andy Piper. Hey, Andy.
Hello, Michael. Glad to have you back. We hope that you had a really great trip and vacation. I am coming to you from the tiny corner of the metaverse that is called West London.
The new metaverse?
It's all the metaverse, Michael. You know, I mean, it's so new that I'm still adjusting. But I believe my piece of the metaverse connects to one of the pipes somewhere just outside Heathrow. I'm not sure. But yeah, that's my understanding at the moment. How are you, Mr. Michael Rowe?
I am just peachy keen, whiz-bang spiffy. It's been...
Are you in the metaverse too? It's been, the new one or the old one?
I'm
in the OG metaverse.
The OG metaverse. There we go.
Actually, I haven't been in that one in a long time. I'm excited that I am here with my friends to talk tech and games. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Michael, as I look back on our conversation last week, I kind of regretted that you and I had not, in the end, met up in Second Life.
For the show,
We were doing the recording.
I know. I just kind of thought,
for those who may remember, one of our logos for the show, actually the show before this one, was the Dog Ear Nation Studio,
right,
in Second Life.
Right. So, I just kind of thought to myself,
studio chairs.
Yeah, little chairs for our avatars to sit in, and we had a little on-the-air light that would go on when you hit a button in World.
Yeah, it was slick. It was high tech. We spared no expense.
So Andy, you said you might have been playing something, or at least something game related recently, doing something game related.
So I spoke very briefly last week about the fact that I have a thing. It's a console, a handheld console. It's essentially the same size and footprint as the classic Game Boy. It's called a GPI Retro Flag case. And what you do is you get a Raspberry Pi Zero and you kind of wire it into the literally the classic cartridge. You put it in the top and anything on the Raspberry Pi cartridge could be played. So it's very cool. And there's a bunch of, not just for the Raspberry Pi, but for the Mac, for Linux, for Windows, there's a bunch of like retro emulators available. So I've been playing with that for a while. You can run it off three AA batteries. You can run it off USB. You can plug in a micro SD card. So I've been having a lot of fun. Upshot is I've been having a lot of fun with retro games recently, from NES, SNES, Genesis / Mega Drive, which is what we called it in Europe, arcade machines, going back to sort of ColecoVision, Atari,
a ton of
other devices. I've got some stupid number of games, like 700-ish games on there, which is... So much of a wealth of games that you're just like, I don't know what to play.
Do you have
Do you have the original Space Invaders?
So, Michael, that's an excellent question. So that brings me on to my second topic. So, whilst browsing Amazon this week, for reasons, I came across a Kindle book, well, a book, you can get it in hard copy as well as on Kindle, called Hey, Listen.
Hey.
yes. Which those of you that are Zelda aficionados may be familiar with. It's written by a chap in the out of the UK. That individual was one of the co-founders of a UK TV show called Go 8-Bit, where it's a TV show which is hosted by a much more famous, for with the greatest respect to the chap that authored the book and invented the show, you know, he literally says in the book, you know, we got this guy to front it because he's much more famous than us and people would watch his show. And, you know, they got like celebrities on to, you know, play these sort of classic games. And it's a super fun game, super fun show. Anyway, it's a book about the history of computer games. He very specifically says, you know, it's the most important period in gaming history, which is his life. so it goes from Pong to Zelda Ocarina of Time. So that's his sort of, you know, 1970s to when he left university, you know, sort of every game in this period is the greatest game ever invented. He does do an amazing period throughout the 20th century talking about, you know, pinball, arcade machines and all kinds of other things. It's just a really good book. I just wanted to talk about it very briefly because, you know, the show is about gaming as well as work and distractions and just understanding history. So, and I've been getting back into retro stuff recently. So, I sat there last night reading the first couple of chapters and they were talking about, the PDP one game. It was not Star Wars.
It's a Star Trek.
Star Battle. Game. No, it's not the Star Trek game. Yeah. No, it's not that one, Michael. I know the one you're thinking of.
Okay.
But it's from the 1960s, 1970s. Yes, I know Star Trek was the thing then, but it was, and then I sort of was reading my Kindle and then picking up my phone and going, where can I get this game for my, you know, retro Game Boy thing? So anyway, yeah, super cool. All of it's super cool. If you're into retro stuff, there's some very neat stuff going on. And a lot more of the older games are becoming somewhat more available. I know that, you know, there are lots of concerns about copyright, etc. But, you know, a lot of these things can't be played and cannot be purchased anymore on current systems. So they seem to be becoming more available than they were 10 years ago when I was seeking them out. So anyway, I'll stop talking.
No, actually don't yet, because I'm curious about the TV show. So I'm kind of reminded of the Roger Moore TV Nation show where Roger Moore would challenge the CEO to do something with their own products. So was this TV show you referenced before of having celebrities playing games? Was there any relationship there? Was that the humor in that show?
I mean, it was humorous. I don't think it was. I will drop a link into the show notes, of course. It's been running for the last sort of. It ran 2016 through 2018. Evidently, it got cancelled, but they haven't ruled out a return. It was kind of a nostalgic game show, really, for literally a game show. But, you know, as they went through the show, you had a couple of you know, comedians that would join the comedian host
But they were the GOATs, right? They were the greatest of all time comedian hosts.
And they would, throughout the course of the show, they would talk about their favorite sort of 8-bit, 16-bit, 32-bit games, play them against one another online. It was not the same as what Michael just referenced. I think Michael also, you may have yourself said Roger Moore instead of Michael Moore.
I didn't mean to.
But no, I mean.
Well, Andy, you are doing your job today. Yes. I mean, I haven't talked about Legos once.
Well, you haven't, but there's so much to talk about there. My wife doesn't know it yet, and I can tell her I can speak about this on our podcast because she still doesn't know it. She has got the new VW camper van, the second edition.
Nice. Arriving. With the cloth elements and all.
Yeah, with the pop up roof, yeah. And the cloth elements, and she just has had the first version. She hasn't built it yet. From like 5 years ago, sitting in a box in her study,
you know what she needs? A second box.
Yeah, so I got the second one, which should, I think, be arriving tomorrow. So she'll now be like faced with two Lego camper vans because she doesn't actually have a real camper van. Anyway, we haven't really got into any of our topics for this week, so let's maybe move along.
Yeah, let's do good fun stuff there, though. I like it. And Michael's flying his space shuttle around as we go too. All right, so first off the list here is an article about Telegram, which is one of the more secure kind of environments for communication amongst others. And apparently you can have a group call now, not just with your closest personal friends, but with 1,000 or more of them, which seemed to me to be pretty darn big.
No, up to 1,000, not or more.
Well, you could have more than one insane call, right? You could do one and then do another.
Yes. You could have multiple calls with
1,000. Right, so
1,000 people.
It's 1,000 viewers. It's 1,000 viewers, but 30 participants, right? Just to be totally clear.
Yes. Yes. And you know, we had fun talking games at the beginning. Well, this is the work part. Yep. Because I guess you could use this in a gaming context if you were having a battle royal on, say, some kind of battle royal game platform, and you could all chat at each other over Telegram. But as Andy, as you rightly pointed out, only 30 of you could actually be active, and the rest could listen.
So I have not yet come across Telegram as I appreciate that I'm in a particular bubble, as all three of us are. I have not yet come across Telegram as an external meeting service. I've used Teams, I've used Zoom, I've used
WebEx,
I've used Google,
FaceTime,
Meet,
yeah,
and I've used FaceTime. Yeah, so those are basically the five that I've used in the last 18 months whilst we've been under lockdown, and you know, we've needed to connect with folks in different scenarios. I mean, I'm familiar with Telegram. I have Telegram installed. I appreciate Telegram's privacy features, but I haven't yet come across an organization requiring or asking me to use Telegram in order to have a conversation, whether it's a one-on-one, 4-on-1, or 1,000-on-30.
30.
Just saying. I don't know. I'm not dissing Telegram here at all. I'm just curious about the spread and usage of that service.
Yeah, well, and there's YouTube and Twitch and others which seem to fit the same niche too, wouldn't you say?
For broadcast, I think you're right. Yeah. But I'm not so sure from a meeting. I mean, of course, you know, YouTube integrates with Google Hangouts /Meet or whatever the thing is these days that Google talks about, because they've gone through 17 different video conferencing solutions. Sorry, I know I'm being cynical, but Yeah, I agree. I think I'm curious.
I think for massive secure conversations, this could be an intriguing thing, because I've played with Signal too a bit, and I've used that, not having had a corporate or business need for it, but doing it on a more personal level. This could be a big organizing capability, which then therefore enjoys more of those security rights and privileges, which I'm not fully aware of all of them, being in my own bubble, but interesting for that too, right?
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so now we've talked a little bit about phones, and let's talk a little bit about ringtones. And this one came across my feed, which I was pretty amazed by, and I knew Michael would jump on this too. But NASA has an extensive library of ringtones with all kinds of mission audio and the like, and they've set it up so it's easy to import and begin to use. And we've got an article from 9to5 Mac that tells you precisely how to do this. So if you want your phone to take advantage of classic space sounds, and we know space is hard, this makes it easy.
So, I mean, space is a void and is a vacuum and has no sound. So, you know, if you want your iPhone, Android phone, or any other phone to make space noises when it rings, then this may not be the way for it. No, obviously, I'm joking. Like you, Michael, as soon as I saw this come across my radar, and Michael will back me up here, I immediately messaged him and said, dude, you must already have this as one of your ringtones.
The first I saw was from you, Andy.
I appreciate that.
And unfortunately, I have not had a chance to do this yet, and it's not space sounds, it's mission audio.
Correct.
And what's really cool in the example here, they actually show, at least on iPhone, how to set your haptic engine so that the sounds will also feel right. Mm-hmm. So at launch, right, there's a launch sound, and you hear the engines going up and making that rumble. And if you've ever been to a launch, I mean, you feel it miles away. And then you turn on the haptics with it, so your phone will feel like it's just shaking at the launch. So I thought that's really cool. And I have not had time to do this. The thing that I was thinking of when I saw this article was, I remember when I first got my iPhone and even my smartphones before then, spending a lot of time designing custom ringtones. Matter of fact, there used to be a ringtone store. Mm-hmm. There may still be on iTunes, where you could buy a song for 99 cents, but you could buy the ringtone, which was a 30-second clip from that song, for $2.99.
Such a bargain.
which was a great, wonderful bargain. And I had gone in and went into my music library and built my own ringtones in GarageBand based off of songs in my library, just like a little clip from a specific song that I thought would be cool for when a certain person rang the phone. So, and I really hadn't heard much about ringtones lately. And when I'm out and about, 9 times out of 10, I just hear the standard ringtone that comes from the carrier who put the phone that people bought. Right.
The .m4r format, right, for the ringtone. I've not played with that forever for the longest time. I mean, it's cool that you can do it, and it's very cool that NASA has engaged with the fact that a proportion of the of humanity is likely to have one. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's great, and NASA is really great about providing digital content from a lot of stuff. If you have a 3D printer, they have a whole library of 3D models now from scans of stuff that's been in space. Right, I have an actual. I did a Kickstarter with NASA, and I have a scan of the glove from the first astronaut on the moon.
Amazing.
They did a high-res 3D scan of that.
Wow.
Called Save the Suit, and they scanned the entire suit so that people could, as the suit slowly has been deteriorating over all these years, could actually, you know, see it in full 3D, etc. It's really, really cool.
Neat-o. So where do we go next after space and sounds?
Yes, where do we go from space?
Yeah, well, we go to a race, naturally, you know.
Space race.
It could be the space race or the space mission race. Like, no, it's not. Actually, it is electric vehicles. So a Car and Driver article, which I've actually chatted a little bit about with my brother-in-law today, too, deals with a cannonball-style race, which is intended to really take advantage of what is it like to do long-distance driving with an EV and having to do the recharges and plan your trip and recognize where you need to go. And this caught my attention, too. I actually have a patent in this space. There's space again. To allow people to get to where they need to go in a way that does not create all the range anxiety that you might need. So, fun article on a lot of fronts. The chart that I found most interesting is there's a driving versus charging chart in the mix. And the conclusion here is at the present time, the Tesla vehicles, because of the ubiquity of the supercharging stations along routes, make it much easier to get from here to there when here to there is more than your typical range. But there's plenty that's catching up. So, Andy, I was thinking about you, too, because I know you're kind of getting into the where am I going to go? And it's not that you plan a 1,000-mile trip on a regular basis.
There aren't 1,000 miles to go in the UK. So
I was about to say.
Well, between here and Tennessee, we put in more than 1,000 miles last week. So
I go back to the Aladdin movie, and I just think of the itty bit of living space when I think of the UK. But anyway,
well, one of the things that I find fascinating is there's a pretty strong move underfoot to get Tesla to open up their network of charging stations to other EVs. And for us to really see mass adoption of EVs, it has to be as convenient for and the average person to top off. Exactly. That's part of convenience, to top off their vehicle electrically as it is today to go down to the corner filling station and put petrol or gasoline or diesel in their vehicle.
Yeah.
Right. Right. I agree. And the convenience factor has to mean that they're available, that there are pumps or spigots available for the electrons to get in, and also the timing of them too. So all of those convenience factors have to be there, and we're still a ways off from all
right.
that.
Right,
right. Speaking of Tesla, there was a funny little article that I saw here. Tesla has a capability called Sentry Mode, and this little tweet and the video attached to it was a Sentry Mode activation where the Tesla owner is like, I'm just gonna start publishing these videos. So someone found it appropriate to go and sit on the frunk of their car, and that's all captured by the multiple cameras on the Tesla. And thought to myself, gosh, why would anyone sit on somebody else's car, you know, to get a selfie or a picture? Not quite a smart idea. Cameras are everywhere.
We've not spoken about it, but your BMW has been sat on multiple times whenever I've been in the US. Yeah.
What?
Yeah,
I know. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, no, I'm, well, yes, I am. But anyway.
Dang it. Oh, thank God. all right. Next, we're into a little bit of security and a lot of
journalism. I still can't believe you didn't detect my butt prints on the hood. That's just saying.
I know every scratch on that car.
I thought you were doing it on the top, right?
No. I mean, I'm laying down on the top. I mean, it's my back print on the top. Yeah. It's my butt print on the hood. Yeah.
well, that would explain a lot now, I think.
Yeah, there we go.
On to security and journalism. So, Michael, this is a story that's two topics close to your heart. Walk us through why this ZDNet article, which is actually showing us nothing much, is so interesting.
Well, I was hoping our listeners would go over to the website and click on the link and see that it shows them nothing. No, seriously. This was a really interesting article coming out of Black Hat this week around a security flaw that's being called bad alloc, right? So think of memory allocation problems, which is a great way of causing issues from a security perspective. If you can programmatically cause a computer to crash, you can programmatically use that as an entry point to do a security flaw. I mean, that's really the first step in any kind of malicious behavior, is to have a site or a transaction or a message that crashes your machine, right? And so it was an interesting article. I went to go read it, and I noticed in the first paragraph was a wonderful, just a wonderful quote from the researchers who were at Black Hat talking about what they did. And it said, you know, researchers A and B said, colon, XXX, period, new paragraph. So someone had written the article, spent some time, and were looking to get a good quote for their article. In the meantime, all the different websites that just republish articles from major news sites have published the article verbatim with their own byline as the author of the article, and with the said colon XXX period new paragraph aspect, and ZDNet appears to have taken it down so that they can actually finish the article. And so it's one of these things. It's like, security is important. It is hard. I think ZDNet, from a security perspective, actually does a really good job of covering things like Black Hat, the RSA conference, and other conferences like that, White Hat. And so it just was funny seeing this happen over the course of the day of posting it into our show notes, which actually captures the front of the article. Right. So we saw the article, but when you go to it, it takes you to a landing page on ZDNet saying, here are security topics, because the article's gone. Yeah. One of these fun things. So I've been looking to find a real article on bad alloc, just because I'm interested in it. And all I've found so far today have been the republishes under somebody else's name on other, quote, security sites.
Intriguing. And speaking of intriguing, and I know we're getting short on time, but this is a neat conversation here too. We do like to keep an eye on what's going on in academia and in higher education. And Michael, with your background from our friends in Durham at Duke University, you put in an article around an announcement that was made just a couple days ago.
Yeah, one of the key things that we've seen over the last, it's been going on for a very long time, but as AI has become more and more important, and how algorithms have been driving more and more behavior in society, we've gotten to the point where the lack of diversity in the development area for software is an issue, right? And it's showing itself to be an issue in algorithms and in AI learning. And so this is a National Science Foundation Award for two members of the Duke faculty to really look at driving tools and strategies that increase adoption of tech positions, tech learning, and tech graduations for historically underrepresented groups. I think this is fantastic. I'm really glad to see this. One of them is a professor of practice in computer science, and the other one in electrical and computing engineering and computer science, all areas that I think could really use a infusion of innovation driven by diversity.
Very, very cool. Seeing as we're close on time, there's maybe one last article that's in the mix here that is worth touching. It's the one right after this next one. It's from our show notes. It's from the Washington Post, and it deals with how virtual work is making us be less human and sound like a corporate robot. And reading through a little bit of this, my sense was, yeah, okay, there are a number of phrases that are annoying as heck to those who hear them on a regular basis. It does not make you sound like so much of a human that you are in your normal life, and it gives some suggestions of what to say otherwise. I have another two thoughts on it or so, but I'm curious to know what your take is. Michael, you're smiling.
Yeah, well, this came across my Twitter feed from Doug Adams, which is different than Douglas Adams.
Yeah.
Who's probably not tweeting right now.
Could be.
See reference in the past. Yes. Doug Adams is a Apple script developer that I've actually bought some of his scripts before that do really cool things with iTunes. Mm. So I've been impressed by some of his technical skills in Apple script. And I started thinking about this because we've all been working at home for a while now. And I have found myself using some of these terms about, you know, I'll ping you later as an example, right? In personal conversations, right? It's really annoying because we've lost that boundary.
Right.
We've lost that work-life balance, mm-hmm. right? I used to joke that, and you can't see this on an audio podcast, but if you take your right hand and put it up to about where your ear is, and your left hand and put it down to where your waist is, and imagine that being a scale, it is still in balance.
Right.
Right? It's now equal balance of them being, you know, at the same level. And we've definitely lost that. So I am trying to mentally make the effort to stop using work terminology at home and with friends who are not work related. Right. Andy, what about you?
I agree. Yeah, completely. I think, I agree with Michael. That's my really easy statement.
I want you to note the timestamp.
Luckily, this is recorded.
I will add this as an M4R file.
In my time zone.
In my ringtone library that I just created.
I agree with Michael.
So when you call.
There we go. We'll have a little NASA thing, and then it will just go, I agree with Michael.
3, 2, 1, lift off. I agree with Michael.
There we go. That's probably the easiest place to land, so to speak. And I agree with you too, Michael. The one thing that I have, at least in the back of my head on this, is that there are a number of phrases, colloquialisms, and others that have context that can be used in multiple environments. Mm-hmm. And the speech that is used in a work context can also be used in non-professional contexts as well when you're trying to make a particular point or demonstrate inclusion of a group. So circling back to the earlier couple of articles that we just talked about, see what I did there? There is the notion of being inclusive in the conversation and not being exclusive to others. So watching the way that language and ideas are expressed become important. So there are places where I think it's not entirely bad. You know, I'll ping you later. You know, I'll call you later. I'll text you later. I will get in touch with you later. I will communicate with you later. Yes, we could, you know, describe that maybe a little bit more differently. But we're also technology folks. And something like I'll ping you later is a signal that we are kind of a technology geeky kind of person. And that's okay.
Yeah, what it really tells us is that we're all former sub operators, right? One ping only.
Well, I always thought the ping came from ping, which was, you know, from the line item command.
Yes, which came from subs pinging. Anyway, you know, I think that's probably a good note to end on. And we just want to thank everybody for a lot of interesting links this week. Keep reaching out to us. Rate us over on iTunes, on Pocket. What is it? Pocket Casts has a rating library. Amazon Podcasts have one. We're on Stitcher. Gosh, I don't even know all the places that we're located, but rate us there. We would really appreciate that. It helps others find us easier. Or follow us over on Twitter at games@work_biz. And maybe tell us, what game are you playing lately?
Yeah, because we'd like to know.
Yes. Other than that, we will see you next time at games@work.biz.
So long, everybody.
Bye. You've been listening to games@work.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at games@work_biz or at our website at games@work.biz.